Hello and welcome. This is a special Farm to Tabor mini-series on plant health for cannabis. It's a really interesting area right now because growing cannabis used to be a very private affair, and the main goal was to not get caught. But now that it's becoming okay to do it in the open, growers are free to focus a lot more on the normal stuff, like good yields, plant health, worker safety, and just how to keep everything running smoothly. So today we're joined with Travis Higginbotham. He's a horticulture guy from Clemson who's now working at Fluence Bioengineering, one of the main lighting providers for the indoor cannabis grow industry. Fluence brought him on board because a lot of folks may have experience growing cannabis indoors, like four plants in a closet, and things do get really different as you scale up into a greenhouse or a warehouse with lights. They found that for their growers to have a good experience, it really helped to have a plant nerd on call, and Travis is that guy. I'm all about picking people's brains and getting good info out to the public, so here we are with a five-part series on the ins and outs of running a cannabis grow, at least the plant health parts. We hope you get some good useful info out of it, and thanks for listening. Travis, tell us a little bit about what you do and who you work with.
My name is Travis Higginbotham, and I am the Global Director of Cultivation Support at Fluence Bioengineering by Osram. My position at Fluence is to help build a team that has the ability to support our customers on being successful when implementing LED technology in their either indoor facility or greenhouse. I work for Fluence Bioengineering, and we are specifically a company solely focused on lighting for photobiology applications, so specifically for plants.
Very cool. So can you tell us a little bit more about kind of what your day-to-day looks like? What kind of, you know, what kind of tasks are you doing?
We work with multiple different growers, you know, between all horticultural market segments. And so what that is growers that grow cannabis indoors or in greenhouses, or vertical farming growers with leafy greens indoor or greenhouse, and also commercial vine crop growers. And when I say vine crops, I mean tomatoes, cucumbers, and also short stature crops like strawberry and pepper, along with floricultural and ornamental crops in greenhouses. So this is kind of the different growers that we come in contact with. And specifically on the cultivation support side, we work with our customers to help them understand the benefits with LED, as well as understand what they will have to change within their different production systems in order to maximize the potential of this new technology. And so day to day, we have different programs that our cultivation support service offers. And so depending on what program the grower is involved in, we have 6-month to 12-month programs. We work with the growers. We have on-site visits. We work with certain specialists throughout the industry. So let's say there's a specific area of production that the grower is interested in learning more about. We bring in specialists to help dive deep with that grower, probably at a level that possibly we don't know enough about that we would like to work with these specialists on. But overall, we can support in nutrition, substrate management, IPM, all of the basic horticultural growing practices we can support on. But ultimately, we are there to help them be successful with LEDs.
So that kind of ties into something I've been seeing a lot of working in the horticultural industry, which is that if you go to certain regions, like, for example, the Netherlands and, you know, like even Spain, they do a lot of greenhouse growing. You know, very intensively in the Netherlands and just around the world, most other rich countries do a lot of greenhouse growing, and the U.S. is kind of unique in that we don't do as much of that. And so what you find is that I feel like the big thing that's slowing us down with adoption in the U.S. right now for greenhouse technology is just that we don't really have the human capital that already really knows what to do with a greenhouse, like how to build one, what to do with it once you've got it. I feel like that's kind of our big bottleneck right now, and I'm wondering if you're kind of seeing that as well.
That's an interesting perspective. Greenhouse production in the U.S. is I would say is quite significant in regard to, and I have to break it up. When I say greenhouse, you know, we have to break it up into those different market segments. So like if we talk about flower production and ornamental production in the U.S., this is hundreds of acres under glass, really advanced glass environmentally controlled greenhouse. But you're right, when we look at vegetable production, vine crops and short stature crops, the U.S. certainly does not come close to the quantities that are produced out of the Netherlands and out of Spain. I agree with you.
Cool. So again, like if you're a company that's in the business of, you know, trying to sell equipment and that kind of thing, you need to make sure that people, regardless of what their background is, are able to use it successfully. So is that kind of why you find yourselves doing a lot of training and education and all that kind of stuff?
Yes. And I would say that Fluence has a very heavy focus on cannabis. And so within the cannabis industry itself, compared to other markets, it's a very, very new industry. And depending on who's getting involved on the cannabis side, there's a significant learning curve to just get into horticulture in general. And so we find ourselves having the opportunity to educate on a more general sense on what's already happened in other industries to help advance cannabis to the point to where they need to be parallel to what's already known in multiple other markets.
Yeah, and that's a big thing you see. I've kind of worked with, I'm blanking on her last name, Nadia Saba, to some extent on some of her greenhouse stuff. And she's got some wild stories, and I'm sure you guys do as well. Kind of a big theme seems to be like a lot of the cannabis industry so far as it has been in a closet using, you know, sodium lamps. And those tend to generate a lot of heat, which is not a big deal if you have like one in a closet, but when you fill up an entire warehouse with them, then you run into some HVAC issues. So a lot of her work has been with either, okay, we need to really upgrade the HVAC in this building, or we need to switch over to LEDs so we're not putting out as much heat load. Is that something that you guys kind of find is coming up repeatedly? Because it sounds like for her, it comes up over and over again.
Yes, yes, we do. And for the record, Nadia is extremely impressive. So I concur on that note. But no, you know, HPS and some of this other legacy technology is still widely used because you're right. It was one. It was some of the technology that was used when cannabis wasn't so mainstream. And so people's experience with it then have dictated kind of that perception now. But yes, we're seeing that, you know, with higher light intensity, so the more light that growers want to apply, they're starting to come in contact with higher loads of heat. And that's because the light quality that's emitted from these fixtures also incorporates a good bit of infrared, and that infrared cannot be used by the plant. And so it then dissipates through the environment as heat. And that in many cases, that's not desirable because plants respond differently to heat as they do to light. And so when you have one fixture that emits two different environmental factors, and both of those factors are tied into that fixture, then you don't have the versatility that you need as a grower to manipulate each of those independently as accurately as you can, if that makes sense. Because you want to be able to manipulate heat separate from light intensity to maximize production.
Yeah, and that's kind of the something that seems to keep coming up again. And I'm not that involved in cannabis grow out. I typically get involved in indoor agriculture for food safety reasons, which is when somebody who's growing like lettuce or basil is trying to sell to a grocery store, so they call me to help them pass food safety so they can sell to grocery stores, which is not a thing that happens in cannabis. So I'm not as experienced in that side of the thing, but you'll hear a lot of talk about a lot of powdery mildew, a lot of spider mites. And from the IPM perspective, these are two pests that tend to show up when it's very hot and when it's very dry, which seems like it's probably related to the lighting situation.
No, I agree. I think that your choice of lighting can impact pest and disease pressure, you know, and other environmentals play a big part in whether or not those pests and disease are, you know, going to be there and active also. But, you know, let's say a grower has, you know, they're using only HPS, but they have decent airflow and decent control of the environment, their pressure may not be as high. You know, but I do agree that that certainly can contribute, especially with how densely grown cannabis is grown in indoor facilities. It is interesting to me that that cannabis is quite fixed on a few things within the mindset of growers. And what I mean by that is, cannabis itself is treated as an annual flowering crop. And for those listening, an annual means that it goes through one growth cycle. It goes through a complete growth cycle in one season and dies. So it goes through a cycle, flowers, produces seed and fruit, and then dies. And it's not a perennial that can go through a season, produce, and then come back the next year. Cannabis is treated as a short day annual in similar fashion to many ornamentals and flowering crops that are also on the market. And the practices that are used with other short day crops in many ways have yet to be adapted to the cannabis market. So it's interesting, cannabis flowers under a short day, a 12-hour photo period. And a short day by the book is defined by 12 hours.
Right. So when you say other short day crops, we're talking like poinsettias, other things?
So like a garden mum is considered a short day crop. And I like to bring up a garden mum because it's actually the exact same production schedule as a cannabis crop. You have 2 weeks of propagation, 3 to 4 weeks of what you call bulking or the vegetative state. And then you have 6 to 10 weeks of flowering. And this is the exact same schedule that cannabis follows. And I think garden mums are the number one, if not the second most sold floricultural crop in the U.S. So I say that because
they're huge.
Yes, and I say that because that style of production of a short day crop is nothing new. You know, and many people think that cannabis is this white unicorn of a crop, and it certainly is in regard to secondary metabolites and the potential that these compounds have for humans. But in regard to overall crop production and short day crops in general, this is nothing new.
So for what it's worth, if anybody's looking for good cultivators out there, again, not mums, I'm going back to poinsettias because that was a big crop down in Florida. But when I was at University of Florida, the UF horticulture program had a big poinsettia sale every year. So they're pumping out people every year who know how to run a shaded greenhouse, which is kind of fun.
Yeah, poinsettias are another big one, definitely.
Yeah, I mean, and that kind of stuff is really useful to know. What are some things that we should know about growing cannabis, Travis?
Well, I will say that from my experience coming from the ornamental and flower side of things, it's fascinating to me that cannabis, in many ways, is leading the way with indoor agriculture in general, just indoor production of crops, and obviously due to the value on this crop. And cannabis, unlike many other crops like lettuce or strawberry, tomato, petunias, begonias, pretty much every other crop that we grow, aside from possibly soybeans and other high-light-tolerant crops in the field, cannabis can tolerate extraordinarily high light intensities. And there's certain studies that have proven it can tolerate a 65 DLI, which that equates to, you know, one of probably the highest light levels that we receive in the entire United States in the peak of summer, outdoors. And so with that light intensity, and with us actually growing plants completely indoors, we're having to rethink about how we manipulate the environmentals to keep up with the pace of development that this light intensity incurs with cannabis. To start to dive into transpiration and translocation of nutrients and how the plant basically breathes and the difference between plant growth and plant development through the manipulation of all of these different environmentals simultaneously is just fascinating. And I never would have thought that cannabis would have been the crop to push us in this direction, but it is. And it's in North America, we're leading the way with indoor agriculture due to cannabis.
Market conditions, man. So are you getting a lot of new builds in, it seems like California and Colorado, and maybe to some extent Oregon and Washington, are kind of saturated in terms of new operations. Where are you really seeing more go into play?
That's a good question. And I will say that I would have to ask one of our sales team on that one. But I would say in general, it's just continual across the board. And, you know, as more states come online and as different regulations change per state, we're this industry is just continually booming.